This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Anger and hurt were two of the words used by Rutgers women's basketball players at a press conference earlier today in response to insulting comments made by radio host Don Imus. The host of Imus in the Morning is known for dishing out rude and crass remarks, but last Wednesday, many say he went too far.
Some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and
some hardcore hoes.
That's a nappy-headed hoes there, I'm going to tell you that now.
Those words led to an outcry and calls for Imus to resign. MSNBC and CBS Radio have suspended the Imus show for 2 weeks, and he has since apologized. But some say it's not enough. Later in the hour, a law professor who's had it with laptops in the classroom. But first, the fallout over Don Imus's insult. And we'd like to hear from you. Did he cross a line? And is a two-week suspension appropriate? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Clarence Page is here with us. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and nationally syndicated columnist with the Chicago Tribune. He joins us from the Tribune's bureau here in Washington. Welcome, Clarence Page. We are going to go instead to Rochelle Riley. She's a columnist for the Detroit Free Press and wrote a column called Get Rid of Imus and Sexist Rap, Too. She's joining us from member station WDET in Detroit. Rochelle Riley, welcome.
Thank you, Rebecca.
So you say in your piece that perhaps Imus has done us a favor, maybe even two favors. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think any time you draw attention to something that needs to be changed, it helps whether you meant to or not. So what I'm hoping is that this focus on sexist rap, which is where, quite frankly, the language that he used came from, will help us to understand that those are the types of things that shouldn't be on the airwaves. In addition to that, I think that when you have incendiary words that are used in jest, but they cause people to do things that they shouldn't, then you should help to pay for the crime.
And by specifically the word you're referring to as hoes, which is incredibly common in a lot of music, do you think it still contains a derogatory implication, or is it just become synonymous with woman in that music?
It's quite derogatory, but it's also synonymous, and I think that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
This language has become so acceptable and so much a part of the vernacular that people are beginning to take it for granted that it's okay to use it, and that's why it has to stop.
So let me turn the question to you that we turn to the listeners, which is, do you think this punishment, the suspension of Imus's show, fits the crime?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I heard Don Imus, I listened to his show this morning, particularly because I wanted to hear how he described the Sharpton interview on his show when he appeared on Al Sharpton's show. And he talked about how he, you know, got this from black people, that they say this. And I have a 17-year-old daughter, and I've taught her since she was five that you don't do other things just because someone else does. It doesn't make it right. And I think part of the problem is the only way we're going to put a stop to it is to do it in a fashion that's so dramatic that literally people will not be able to do it. And for CBS Radio to take that kind of stand, it will require other people to do it as well. So, yes, I think he deserves to have the fullest punishment that's possible.
Well, that brings up the question of who exactly is using certain language. You know, sometimes groups will adopt derogatory language about themselves in order to diffuse its power. You know, that's what a lot of African-Americans say about the N-word, those who decide it has become acceptable. Do you think if Don Imus were a black broadcaster, using hoes would be less offensive?
It wouldn't be less offensive to me, nor to the many young African-American girls who have to hear something like that and feel inferior or feel sad about themselves. There are some people who think that it's okay. There are some radio stations where people talk like that. And again, I think they're part of the problem, not part of the solution. What has to happen is for people to decide that all of it is wrong, and it's bunk to think that these things are acceptable and diffuse the words. The words are bad no matter who uses them.
Let's get some callers involved. This is Lisa in Hollywood, Florida. Lisa, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. I'm sorry. I'm driving, and I'm nervous.
Well, be safe.
Thank you for bringing that up. your previous commentator hit the nail on the head. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. I don't care if you're gay, straight, Catholic, or Jewish. You know, whatever you are, whatever you identify yourself as in any regard, you know, it's a very derogatory word, and how it's become mainstream now is extremely upsetting to me. I just happened to turn the radio on my way to work, and I'm like, no, you have to be kidding me. And the Rutgers girls
so,
are all...
So you're an IMUS listener.
Girl, that was a big mistake. He is not going to see the last of this.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will finally take him down, because he's just a sexist pig, and he needs to be taken down you know, professionally. And that's really how I feel about it.
Lisa, do you listen to the IMUS show regularly?
Hell no. Excuse me. Absolutely not. I wouldn't subject myself to it. Yeah, I mean, and it's insane. I mean, it's almost like saying, okay, so we say whore is a regular word now because of rap music, like the lady before, you know, me spoke. So what are we going to say, whore lover for somebody like Imus? I mean, you know, I mean, until we start coming, it's just going to get crazier and crazier is what I'm saying. And two wrongs don't make a right. And, you know, I mean, I could think of a few choice things that we could call a guy like that. And I just don't think it's right. Two wrongs don't make a right. And I agree with her. The previous caller hit the nail on the head. Saturday Night Live just did a skit. I'm sorry. It was Mad TV. Sorry, Saturday Night Live. And they did a skit Saturday night about a bunch of Jersey girls sitting by poolside with their little, you know, pina coladas, and they were calling each other that word. And they were just saying it in such a mocking way. And you know, it reminded me of, like, when black people say, well, we can use the N-word, but white people can't. You know, I know some Jersey girls where we'll just joke with each other and, you know, use that word. But we don't want it to be an everyday mainstream thing that this guy can just sit back and go, oh, yeah, those, you know, horny basketball players, you know. It's not meant the same way, you know. So, you know, I just think it needs to be taken out of the language.
Lisa, thanks for your call. You know, it's interesting to sort of hear from women who are offended that men say this word, but she just used it, Lisa, a couple of times in that sentence. I actually found it hard to say out loud when I had to say it in the billboard. How do you feel about saying the word, Rochelle?
Well, I think part of the problem is I have no reason to say the word. I don't really know anyone who has that as a profession, and I don't necessarily talk to my daughter about things like that. I literally think that the only time you hear it is whether someone's trying to be demeaning or start a fight, or whether it's a part of rap where that's literally how they describe their girlfriends, you know, my H or my B. And what could be more demeaning than that? I think what's happening is we're raising a generation of boys who think that's an okay way to treat women, and a generation of girls who think that's okay to be treated that way. And there could be nothing worse than that.
Let's take a call from Mike in North Carolina. Mike, welcome to the Talk of the Nation.
Hey, thank you very much.
You're on the air. What do you think about Imus's comments?
First of all, let me say, I am no Don Imus fan at all. I do not ever watch his show but about a minute or two here and there once a week. But I think this thing is really being blown out of proportion. For instance, I think if Tom Joyner, who I like much better than Don Imus, would have said that, nothing would have ever been said. We wouldn't even be having this conversation. I've heard Tom Joyner, as a matter of fact, say things that might have been offended to white people. I thought it was funny. I think people, if you get offended, you need to go to sensitivity training or something. I mean, get over it. Big deal. You know, what about when Reverend Jesse Jackson referred to Atlanta as a Heimy town? Big deal. Who, you know, I think people need to be confident in themselves that if somebody says something, ignore it. I teach school. That's what I tell my kids. If somebody says something to you, you need to be big enough to walk away from it.
Mike, thanks for your call. Rochelle Riley, what do you think about the idea that the sort of rhetoric of talk radio is so loaded and the most outrageous comment gets the most attention, and it's become sort of business as usual for that particular medium, that this is being blown out of proportion, that it's not different from what gets thrown around on that medium every day?
Well, I appreciate Mike's comment, but here's the problem with that. We've heard much in the past few days about how Imus isn't alone, and Mel Gibson and Michael Richards and Isaiah Washington all had slips of the tongue where they used hateful language. But the bottom line is those words don't come out of people who don't have those words in them, and the dam that holds back the hate isn't going to last much longer. So at what point do we say, okay, this is too much, enough is enough, let's clean it up before we go too far? It's just like when we were kids and you'd play the dozens and, you know, you'd say something horrible and then somebody would say something horrible back. But the first time somebody talked about your mama, then you were, you know, that's when the fight started. So you have to know when to stop. We somehow have lost our idea of knowing when to stop.
Well, do you think the Michael Richards and Mel Gibson situations have sort of set the bar higher on insulting remarks?
No, I think that literally, like I said, it's just becoming more commonplace. People are feeling freer to say exactly what they feel. You've got more hate spewing out. You've got people feeling like they can say things that, you know, they never would have said before. Quite frankly, 15 years ago, a shock jock or someone trying to be a shock jock might have been fired instantaneously that day, and there wouldn't be all this fodder, and we'd have more time to talk about something important like the war. I think that literally the reason this has gotten such mileage is because it took so long for anything to happen, for him to apologize, for CBS Radio to say, oh, you know what, he went too far. And disc jockeys across the country do this, and they're suspended all of the time. It happens. They get it over quickly. They're done. There was just this sense of arrogance about this that, oh, this was no big deal. I didn't mean it. I'm a good person. Let's move on. You can't move on if you don't think, take Don Imus out of this. Just don't think about him for a second and think about those girls, those athletes who didn't do anything to anybody, and yet they're in the middle of this controversy and call something so vile, and they have to live with that. They have to go back to campus and walk around like that, and surely somebody is going to go, oh, there they go. You know, it is really too much.
I don't know if you got a chance to see the team's press conference earlier. They were, to a woman, impressive. And the leader of the team, Essence Carson, said, basically, where were all these cameras when we almost beat Tennessee, when we were doing what we are proud of? Why weren't you paying attention to us then?
Exactly. That's my point. The only time somebody's going to pay attention to them is when they have been denigrated, and they can go and look at them through the veil of this horrible language, as opposed to looking at them as truly remarkable women.
We are talking to Rochelle Riley. She's a columnist with the Detroit Free Press. She's talking to us from member station WDET in Detroit. We need to take a short break, but we will be back with Clarence Page and Rochelle Riley and your calls. Did Don Imus cross a line? And is there any way he can make amends? 800-989-TALK is the number to call, or send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington, D.C., in for Neil Conan. We're talking about the firestorm that erupted after Don Imus directed a racist and sexist insult at the Rutgers women's basketball team last week. He apologized and faces a suspension, but some want him fired. Still with us is Rochelle Riley. She's a columnist for the Detroit Free Press and wrote a column called Get Rid of Imus and Sexist Rap, Too. If you want to join us, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And Clarence Page is here with us. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and nationally syndicated columnist with the Chicago Tribune. He joins us from the Tribune's bureau here in Washington. Welcome, Clarence.
Hi, thank you. Happy to join you.
Now, I understand this isn't the first time Imus said something that you considered offensive. You called him on it 7 years ago on his show. Let's take a listen to this tape.
Okay, number one, I, Don Imus, do solemnly swear...
Do solemnly swear...
...that I will promise to cease all simian references to black athletes.
That I will promise to cease all simian references to black athletes.
A ban on all references to non-criminal blacks as thugs, pimps, muggers, and Colt 45 drinkers.
I promise to do that.
Very good.
He promised you he would change, and yet here we are again.
Yes, he was... he fell off the wagon. That's basically what it comes down to. I tried. It's always been my position that if somebody offends other people or groups of people out of ignorance rather than malice, then educate them. Give them a chance to learn and redeem themselves. I'm a big believer in redemption. But it's become apparent to me over time that Don and Bernard McGurk, whose voice you might have heard in the background there, his producer, who was involved in this nappy-headed hose interchange, and all the other folks who profit off of their talents, they're really rather enjoying this. And when you dance on the edge, you slip off the edge sometimes. And I think Don thought he was going to get away with just having an apology last Friday. But we see over the weekend this has bubbled up into a major controversy to where he was apologizing all day long on Monday, and the day ended with him being suspended from the airwaves for a couple of weeks.
Now, you said
I
he
think,
fell off the
obviously
wagon.
Obviously, he's gone too far.
You said he fell off the wagon. Had he been on the wagon in the last 7 years? Had he gotten better about his language?
Maybe it's just my perception, but at least he himself had definitely backed away from engaging. As much as I heard him on the show, he had backed away from engaging directly in the kind of inflammatory humor that Bernard continued to practice. I think Bernard was hired, and I do believe Don implied this in a 60 Minutes interview, that Bernard was hired like the bad cop, the shock jock on the show with the more edgy comedy, while Don could sit back and sound like a tempering voice. Now, Bernard, gonna get me in trouble again, blah, blah, blah. They're a team. This is Don Imus, Inc., and it's a very successful enterprise, combining shock jock with VIP newsmakers, political candidates, journalists. So they get a broader audience than your average radio talk show, and everybody benefits from that broad audience. But it's a risk. Hard to play both those worlds at the same time, and I think that's where Don has fallen into the hole this time.
Let's take a call from Roland in Virginia. Roland, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to take a chance. I don't listen to Imus that much, and when I do, it's kind of hard to hear. But in his defense, when I seen the Spike Lee video that he tried to base his remarks of, it to me said that this is a double-edged sword here. We kind of gave him the muscle to mouth off on, and even though he botched that thing up and whatnot, in society today, we still do cracker jokes. We still do a lot of stuff, you know, that we go unpunished for. I think Don Imus' biggest problem was getting caught on tape with that one. And my question, and I haven't really heard much about this, is how far does this lean to slander of those girls, since it was actually said, it wasn't true? Where is the slander in this? He was wrong, and yes, he has a price to pay. I don't think he should be fired, because he actually tried to base this off of something that actually happened. I've seen the Spike Lee video, Jigaboos and Hoes and all that. But where does this fall in the realm of slander towards the girls? That's my question.
Thanks, Roland, for your question. Clarence Page, do you have an answer for him, do you think?
Well, I think whether it's legal slander or not, we can see it. He did slander their reputations, because hoes is not a nice word. Nappy-headed is certainly uncomplimentary, to say the least. I think Dolly Don has used Spike Lee's school days as an excuse for why they went down this conversational track. Spike Lee, over the weekend, said to the effect that Imus does not understand at all what school days was about. And having seen the movie, I would agree. But you know, the caller, though, raises one point about, you know, us as African Americans, say, giving the ammo to Don to do this. I would say, you know, he makes a point, and Rochelle has written about this, the whole, and so have I, for that matter, the whole mentality that glorifies these kind of negative images, using words like ho in hip-hop culture. We've defined deviancy down, to quote the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, in the black community, and I think that's part of the reason why the big negative reaction, because ho has not been a nice word in proper black society any more than in white society.
Well, Rochelle Riley, what would you think about adding ho to one of the FCC watch lists? That, can you imagine a circumstance under which it would be appropriate to broadcast that word?
Well, I think it's bigger than that, because that makes it too formulaic. We're talking about something huge, because we're teaching children that sex is no more important than chewing gum, and racism is the price you pay to live in America. And quite frankly, I'd rather not have a list where you could ever call somebody something like that, unless you are a police officer who is trying to pick up someone who called themselves that for a living. You know, I'm still reeling from the story out of Union Parish down in Louisiana about the 5 fifth graders who were caught having sex in an unsupervised classroom while other students watched. Don Imus is sort of caught in the middle of something that's bigger than he is, and it's just his time, because we don't have lines anymore. I want respect for women. I want sexist rap to be available only in dirty little theaters with XXX on the front. And, you know, instead of bringing sexy back, I want to bring the line back. So that means I don't want to try and figure out how to make it work. I just don't want it to work.
Let's take a call from Cynthia in Florida. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm a Imus listener. I watch him every morning. I support him. I'm also African American. I wanted to ask a question. What makes someone racist? You know, I'm not sure. I thought Imus was being funny. I didn't think that he was being racist. I want to know what makes a person racist. Because I wasn't offended, and I'm like, should I have been offended? I'm black. I don't know what to say. He makes me laugh. I like his show, and I don't know what to say.
Cynthia, how often would you say you listen? Daily?
Well, every morning I listen to his show while I'm getting my kids off to school, you know, I mean.
And do you think this language was a departure from his regular rhetoric? Did it stand out for you at all?
He calls his wife that name. You know, he's joking. It's a joke. What happened to comedy? Freedom of speech, you know? It's a joke. It was a joke.
Cynthia, thanks for your call. Rochelle Riley, you want to respond?
I just wonder how Cynthia would feel if for some reason he found out who she was and called her that name. I'm talking about the idea that you can pick on someone who's innocent, who has done nothing to you. He didn't have Tim Russert come into the studio and call him that word. He picked on these innocent victims, and he did it in a way that was pejorative based on their race and based on them being women. And I just didn't see anything funny about it.
Clarence Page, because Rochelle mentioned Tim Russert, it gives me the excuse to bring up the notion Imus has a lot of high-profile guests, a lot of well-respected people on his show. What do you think that means for him in terms of being able to attract those guests in the future? Have you gotten any sense of a groundswell of people who might refuse to go back on?
Well, I hear Cal Ripken, former Baltimore Orioles iconic star, has canceled an engagement that he had planned to have on Imus' show. I haven't heard of others yet, but I think for politicians, the atmosphere has been poisoned around Imus' show. Now, just as politicians run into trouble if it's found out that they belong to a club that discriminates against women and non-whites and non-Christians, that same kind of air hangs around the Imus show. I know a number of my pundit colleagues say they're still going on the show, and I was on the NewsHour last night with Tom Oliphant from the Boston Globe, who was on the show Monday, and he was defending being on the show. I was saying, well, I'm not going to do it. And so I think that, you know, he's got enough clout he's built up over the years and enough audience, and I'm sure his audience will grow once again because of this controversy, because that's the paradox of the shock jock. They profit
from
this kind of controversy. That's right. So, I think, but for me, all I got to do is say to myself, nappy-headed hose, while I'm looking in the mirror, and say, do you want to be on a show that's associated with that phrase? And frankly, I don't.
Let's hear from Dan in Kansas City. Dan, welcome to the Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. My question is, I'm just wondering how a person like this who would make a comment of that nature, how does this person become elevated to a national forum where he's on MSNBC? How as a society do we promote this person and have him as a spokesman? It's evidently, I think we need to kind of look into ourselves as a society and wonder and ask ourselves why we have allowed this person to have national exposure. And that's my comment.
Dan, thanks for your call. Clarence Page, is the public and their popularity of Imus to some degree the blame for this? I mean, if enough people like that rhetoric and have, you know, elevated him to the soapbox he has.
Yep, like Pogo said, we've met the enemy and he's us. You know, but this is the double-edged sword of the First Amendment and our freedoms and that wide marketplace of ideas, which I'm all in favor of. And indeed, if Don were to decide to do like Howard Stern and go off the public airwaves to private satellite radio and say whatever he wants to, that'd be a whole different discussion. But we are talking about the public's airwaves here that we all share. The fact that we do have so many choices means that audiences have been segmented. People for whom Imus's humor is not their cup of tea, they just don't tune in, and that's their right, too. That's why he's been able to succeed. I won't say allowed to succeed, just able to succeed over more than 35 years of broadcasting. The man does have talents, and I think it's very clever what he's done, and I don't even think he needs to go to the gutter for this kind of humor, and that's what really disappoints me about him.
So you think in some ways this was just stooping in addition to stupid in addition to being offensive?
Yeah, just pandering, and that's sad. You know, I don't dislike Don Imus. He was very good to me during the five-some-odd years that I was on the show, part of his stable there. And when my book came out in 96, he was very supportive of it on the air, and that's the kind of publicity authors love, you know. But he's also been very good with kids, his program where he takes kids with cancer and other problems out to his ranch in New Mexico, and he's been very supportive of charities. And when I was talking to him about this back in 2001, he cited all of these charitable outreach programs that he has supported across racial and gender lines. And I said, that's great, Don, but it doesn't give you a license to go out now and insult anybody you want to. You know, there's that's the thing. You know, that's why I say I don't know if Don's a racist or not. I can't read his heart. But all I know is he has said racist things, and that's what disturbs me.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we are discussing the fallout from Don Imus's racist and sexist comments last week. So I think we should sort of bottom line this. Clarence Page, do you think he should keep his job?
I think he should be treated like any other shock jock, which he has not been treated like in the past until this weekend. As far as I know, he hasn't even gotten stern warnings after past complaints. Now, he did go over the edge in a way that has resulted in 2 weeks off the air, which is light compared to a lot of other shock jocks, if you will, for similar infractions. But it does put some seriousness to the message, to his apologies, and to CBS and NBC's statements of outrage.
Rochelle Riley?
No one should have a license to hurt, so I am so hoping that this will be an opportunity to show that this will no longer be tolerated and he should be let go.
Let's take a call from Mac in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mac, welcome to the air.
Thank you. I have a totally different take on this situation. As an African American, I think it's important that we get away from allowing people to hurt us and to offend us and realize that people who make those kind of statements are people who are mentally and emotionally disturbed. This is sick and evil, and we need to make them feel the sting of the negative, nasty, offensive things that they do. We as an African American, we simply need to get away from being victim and being able to allowing ourselves to be hurt and harmed by those kinds of words that come from people who are sick and evil.
Mac, thanks for your call. Rochelle Riley, what do you think is a non-victim way to stand up to this sort of thing? What would you like to see the African-American community do in response?
Well, I think you're seeing from not only African-American communities, but any communities that has parents and they have children who they'd like to see raised in a society where this is not acceptable. They're stepping up and letting CBS Radio know that they don't like this. But in addition, I think the most wonderful example is the eloquent and fabulous Rutgers girls themselves. I think by their standard and by the way they've expressed themselves, they give me hope that we can get to a point where this is not acceptable.
There was a lot of talk at their press conference about what good might come of this. In the time we have left, I'd like to hear from each of you of what we might be able to take from this incident in a positive way. Clarence Page?
Well, I liked what Don was saying earlier today about how he and the rest of us need to learn a lot more about each other across racial and cultural lines. I take him at his word now that he's going to make some efforts to try to bring that about. And I'm so glad that the world did get to see the Rutgers women's basketball team. Women's sports don't get enough attention. Women's basketball doesn't get enough attention. This attention came about in a negative way, but I think it's going to end positively because I too was very impressed with those women, and I'm so glad we're finally seeing their real faces.
Rochelle Riley, you got the last word.
Well, as I wrote in my column, I hope that this will sort of take us out of the stupor that we walked around in and allowed sexist rap to get to the point where its vernacular has become our vernacular, and that someone who, quite frankly, is as brilliant and can be as funny as Don Imus decided that he could actually say it too. So maybe this will cause everything to change.
Rochelle Riley is a syndicated columnist with the Detroit Free Press. She's been talking to us from member station WDET in Detroit. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Clarence Page is a syndicated columnist with the Chicago Tribune. He's been talking to us from the Chicago Tribune Bureau here in Washington, D.C. Thank you both. When we come back from a short break, one professor lays down the law on laptops in the classroom. Plus, it's Tuesday, and we'll read from your letters. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.